The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Now, bad old weather for the Easter weekend, but if you have joined us to the county, you are very welcome and I hope you'll have a great stay and I hope you'll all enjoy the Easter weekend. Now, on the Saturday Supplement this morning, it is the first Saturday of the month, so later on we'll have Dominic Walsh for our monthly In Focus photography slot. This month's theme was Ireland's Call, so looking forward to talking about your photos and looking at Dominic's photos. In addition to that, we will have a new five-part series starting today, Come West Along the Feel, which is all about the River Feel. It's a fascinating documentary and some wonderful stories along that river. And later on as well, we will be paying a little tribute to the late, great Paddy Fogarty from Waterville, a great GA man and musician. And of course, of the famous Paddy and Rose Band, we'll be talking about them a little later on as well. But first, a new five-part series, Come West Along the Feel, begins today, following the River Feel from its source in the boglands of North Cork, all the way to the Atlantic, exploring the landscapes, heritage and communities shaped along its course. In this first episode, the journey starts high above Rock Chapel, where the river rises quietly before gathering strength, and we hear from local voices, historians and fisheries experts about its importance for wildlife, culture and daily life. And this is produced by Connie Broderick and Connie took the lead on this. So have a listen to this.
This documentary was produced by Connie Broderick and Joe McGill and is funded by Cumasun na Man with the television licence fee.
The River Feel was called Aonad Caoimhe Deiva. In the Lord Gwala, the Book of Invasions, it was called Aonad Caoimhe Deiva because there was black and probably black wasp out in the mountains. This Feel Valley, you know, it was to the outside of it, there were 200,000 years ago, there was the glaciation and it came from east to west and back to the west. And it hollowed when the east thawed, it hollowed out all that valley back there long. And the river that crossed through it was the Feel.
Rivers have long shaped Irish towns and villages, sustaining the communities that grew around them. In this series, we journey along one in particular, the River Feel. Rising in North Cork and flowing through West Limerick and North Kerry, the Feel is not only rich in history and tradition, but is also one of Ireland's finest salmon and sea trout fisheries. Surrounded by heather-covered bogs, green valleys and rolling hills, it offers some of the most stunning landscapes in the country. From source to sea, we explore the river's course, character and the lives shaped along its banks.
The River Feel is designated as an SAC, so that's a special area of conservation under the EU Habitats Directive, and that's due to its population of wild Atlantic salmon and its connection with the Shannon Estuary. So the Feel also supports healthy stocks of sea trout and brown trout and lamprey species. So we've got lamprey species, sea lamprey, river lamprey and brook lamprey, and it's also important for angling. The river system is also important for other insects like such as freshwater pearl mussel. We've also got good populations of otters and kingfishers and other aquatic birds. Actually here along by the bank of the Feel, there's actually some dippers flying around behind us. So and all of those depend on good clean water and intact river habitats.
Source, you have it marked out with red tape.
Seven Johnny and Martin, when we came in from above, we have it clearly marked down along. You can walk away down along. I know it's rough terrain again, as you say, coming down, but it's all clearly marked. It's very easy to get to, really.
My journey begins high in the southwestern slopes of the Mullacharach mountain range as I follow Johnny Stella, Johnny Mack and Finbar Murphy, both from Rockchapel, to the source.
that little spot there, and she's taking off them. This is the source here, yeah. This is the source.
So right in here.
My name is Finn Bermuth. I'm from Rockchapel.
I'm John Ishak from Rockchapel as well.
We'd be at the source of the River Fee, we'll say, north of Rockhill, we'll say, up towards Milleen, Ashford, all that area, top of Mullagh Cruach, where the source is. Mullagh Cruach is all forestry and bogland, really, and I suppose up top here is the swamps, really. So the view off it is unbelievable, like, unbelievable. When you look down, you can see way down into County Limerick, back as far as, nearly back into Ballyburn, and I said you can see, can't you?
Yeah.
Standing at the source, Finbar describes the field's humble beginning.
As you can see, like, where the source is coming from is actually coming out under the ground. You can actually see it in a couple of different places. It disappears in for a couple of feet, and it appears again. Probably be 2 foot wide, and I suppose you have maybe 6 or 7 foot long where it goes under the ground again. And then there's just a small, maybe 2 foot by 2 foot hole below there where it appears again. And then it goes down onto the misty open river over, and you can actually see there's lovely waterfalls and the river all the way as it goes back down along towards Rockchapel.
Can you flow, can you direct?
Yeah.
The little twist racing is going off the mountain. If the field was flooded in the morning at 9 o'clock and it's stopped rain, we'd gone down at 2 or 3 o'clock in the day. It's massive speed.
Mm.
It's all Cheshke, it's all rocks.
Comes out blood in by the back of the funeral home, they say there. They missed the Lion Eagle, the river then.
Yeah.
And they both flow back through the village then.
It has a lot of tributaries before it goes out to the county as well.
Mm.
It has the Lion Eagle River, it has the Glashing Spidow, which is a small lash again coming down the Stagmount, and it has the Glashed Lions.
Mm-hmm.
The Lonnochiel River and the Brainock.
Yeah, the Brainock.
Yeah, they're the main ones.
They're the main ones, right.
There's about 13 bridges over it, inside the parish lawn.
Yeah.
A lot of tributaries. There's a lot of people running to him.
In stories, close, yeah. Fishing, yeah.
Maybe a bit of poaching down the years.
During COVID, Johnny, along with Finbar and Martin Stack, traced a path to the source of the field, and they hope the Kielta owned land it runs through will one day be opened to the community.
If Kielta could get on board or anything like that, or whatever authorities are there, where we came in there through that bit of a forest there, you could probably go straight through, which could be a shorter again. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be massive. Just a walkway is all you're really looking for. It's all just a walkway. So it'd actually be nice to get it in and let people see where the source is that flows down into Rockchapel, into Mount Collins, Eddy Field, back as it comes out into Ballybunion, it's all behind. And you know, a lot of people don't know where it's rising. You know, it's in Rockchapel, as I say, up in Rockhill North. That's where it is, like, so...
I was curious about what kind of life the river supports, so I asked Johnny and Finbar what they've seen in terms of biodiversity along this stretch of the field.
Even up here, there's deer and dent cut this place.
Mm-hmm.
There are foxes and hares and pheasants.
Mm-hmm.
Colours are scarce.
Yeah.
Over here. Badgers.
So frogs.
You've shoved us. People are feeding along with black cuts. You have sallies,
yeah.
You have
thorns.
Don't have your white horn, and you, I'd say with shot black horn, you'll find the back.
Yeah.
Going back down, chances that you have all sticking, but you'll find trees.
Right, yeah.
You have a bit of ash. You have no walk up here, it's too high.
Mm.
Black fella, the dipper.
Yeah.
Different times of the year, you'll see different birds.
And you have the, what we call here, this one here is the wild angelica, as it's called. Different names for woodland angelica, and as you see, there's a big thick neck, and it's actually called a trumpet neck. Ferns, there's a lot of ferns there as well. And of course, you have loads of trees.
To understand how this stretch of the river is protected and managed, I spoke to Catherine Hayes, Fisheries Inspector with Inland Fisheries Ireland.
Inland Fisheries Ireland is the agency that has the statutory responsibility for the protection, development and management of Ireland's rivers, lakes, and we also have a coastal 12-mile jurisdiction, so we go 12 miles out the coast of Ireland as well. Our principal function is to protect, manage and conserve Ireland's inland fisheries and our sea angling resource. So we play a crucial role in managing and protecting the River Field, which is a significant salmon and sea trout river. Our role includes enforcement, scientific monitoring, habitat conservation and regulatory measures to ensure the sustainability of the river. So for us, I guess the upper part of the field would be maybe from Brusna up. So Brusna, Mount Collins, Rockchapel, possibly even Tourna Fulla, even though you know it's on the alcohol system where that tributary comes in down Moore and Abbey Field, but the upper part of that would be the upper part of the field. A lot of our patrols in the upper part of the field in, especially would be targeted in the winter time where we have salmon up here spawning. Back in the olden times, you know, there would have been a history of people taking salmon off spawning rids, and you know, it's still something that we monitor, but it's not something that we come across. We don't come across very little illegal activity in the winter time.
Catherine explains why the River Feel and this upper stretch is so economically important.
These bogs and upland forestry habitats, they play a major role in shaping both the flow regime and the ecological characteristics of the river from the very source. So the bogs and the heatlands, they act as natural sponges, so they regulate water flow by absorbing rainfall and releasing it slowly. So that just helps to moderate when floods peak and maintain baseline levels during dry periods. So even here today, you know, river levels are very low. We haven't had a lot of rain this year. So water levels are low. So those bogs help to slowly release water back into our systems to make sure there is water left in our rivers and fish are able to traverse up through our rivers. But these upland systems are very sensitive. So commercial forestry, particularly the older plantations that we have in the upper field, they're dominated by non-native conifers like sycamore to spruce, and they can alter this balance. So water runs off them quicker. So we're getting faster floods off of forestry lands. Afforestation and clear filling can also increase the runoff. So again, water is getting to our rivers quicker. We're getting to the peak of our floods faster, and that's not good for the salmon habitat. Forestries can also lead to nutrient input into our rivers, which can negatively impact our water quality. But from a fisheries management perspective, we pay close attention to these upland influences, ensuring that there's proper forestry setbacks and good filling practices, and that's important for protecting our headwaters.
The upper stretch is narrow and fast-flowing. Why are these physical features so important for spawning and upland wildlife?
Fast flows over clean, well-oxygenated gravels are exactly what salmon and trout like to spawn in. So they need good, clean gravels in the wintertime to lay their eggs in what we'd know as reds. So that's where the salmon and the trout lay their eggs. And if we don't have good oxygenated clean gravels, then they're not going to be able to successfully spawn. The current will help to keep the sediments from smothering the reds, and as I said, that will allow the eggs to develop properly. And if the flow is too sluggish or the gravels are clogged, egg survival rates drop significantly. But also narrow channels provide habitat diversity for fish, so it gives you like your riffle pool glide sequences that you would find in your rivers. And these habitats are essential for different life stages of your salmon. So you'd have your salmon fry and your salmon par would live in your riffles, whereas your bigger par and your smalls going to your adults need those pools and that in-stream diversity like random boulders to be able to hide behind to take rest from floods. But other wildlife also benefit. So like I mentioned, we had dippers here and the grey wagtail, so they also rely on the fast flowing water to be able to feed on the aquatic insects that live in our rivers.
That's the first part of episode 1 of Come West Along the Feel, and we'll hear the second part after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Now let's return to episode 1 of a new 5-part series, Come West Along the Feel.
And we're walking down now to... It's Polentier, is it?
Yeah. Polentier, yeah.
Yeah. Lead the way there, we'll follow.
After speaking with Catherine Hayes about how this stretch of the field is managed and protected, I'm back walking with Johnny and Finbar as we move further along the river.
So the field we've been down 4 hours up here. From here we've gone and it's Diddens and back to the Mount Collins. But from here above it is. It's just gone a couple of hours. It's a lot of waterfalls. Even all up along here, there's a lot of waterfalls in this and that.
Way up, yeah. When I showed you the last night, that kind of way up the top, that was the first waterfall you'd meet coming down. We'll come down again, there was another one.
Even below my house, a lot of waterfalls.
Yeah. This one here now, where Paul is here, it's amazing here, like.
This is a beautiful one.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
As we approach Polentier, the roar of the water becomes increasingly louder.
This is just before the flow into Polentier. Can you describe it for us?
I suppose as we look back up along, it's like the way the level of the land has come here. It's like a series of waterfalls. We come down, one drops down again, two, three. It divides in, then there's a little island in the middle, and then four and it comes down to here, and then she sweeps off down into Polentier then. If you could be here to look at it, it's fabulous, fabulous.
Here the river plunges downward like a waterfall tumbling over rocky ledges. We carefully make our way down a steep drop where Powlentir lies below.
This is Powlentir here now where we are. This is actually where the River Field got its name from.
Can you describe the field? What's it look like?
Like you have the field coming down and next thing it's like a split in the rock. And there's just a massive waterfall down into a big pool. And then it takes off down again, down to where the first bridge, Barry's Bridge, and it's in below.
How wide do you think that pool is?
About 7 metres. About 7 by 7, maybe. Depth-wise, we don't know. We don't know. Like when you were up, so, let's say we were up at the side of Rock Hill, and to look over, we're kind of more or less, I won't say level, but near enough. We're after coming down a fair to drop down to here, like...
You see, how big the flood is, it'll stay between the rocks. There's a gorge cut into the rocks. And it's not the speed of the veil, like going back along. Fancy like Dave told me one time, but he saw eels. He saw that place covered with eels. There should be land eels. He said, just fight, just look at them up along the rocks. And go and there should be on the dikes.
There seems to be a bit more life in terms of vegetation and birds yes. in this area, isn't
yes,
there?
Yeah, definitely so.
Down to dairy farms, you know, they're off the mountain, like.
There was a few pheasants there the last year. Just as we were coming down, there was a hawk passed.
Has anybody ever kind of thrown a rod or anything in this spot?
Probably a foot of the human, like, you know, that people used to fish and things. That's how there was a man who was killed up at the field, like, one time, like. Come back on the browns and all them were young rocky with the leaves and. That was like sand on top of that, like they smoked that as well. Probably up to here as well. We fish from the village, but there's salt cuts here, so we just go to the Tiddos and then we just go to Welch's Flats and then we just kind of, we just go to Mount Holler and kind of follow him back. When they were plentiful, we couldn't put a rod in the village. The village was kind of the first place, Chapel Hall, like, and the as well. And back then, on the 8th grade, there were great holes back there, and the salt cuts here, so people went to meet the salt then. There was an eel, he caught him below in the Chapel Hall. He was about 6 foot long. He was 6 inches in diameter. He was all running with him onto the ride. He was on the shore. He was from the way around. He was fishing.
And Finbar was saying here that this is, we believe, where the River Field got its name.
Yeah. So she was swimming there. She had somebody come in. She was naked. She tried to hide. So actually, her husband was coming. She got drowned.
Her name was Field.
Yeah.
In Forest Fasa or Erin, compiled in the 1630s, Geoffrey Keating recounts that the river is named after a princess. Local historian Raymond O'Sullivan from Newmarket shares the tale.
We've all come across the Milesians in school. Mil was the king of Spain at the time and he was a nephew of ye, and he arranged an invasion force to Ireland with the Milesians. To make a long story short, they eventually defeated the Tuatha De Danann. But he, the uncle of Milesius, he had a son called Lee. He comes into the scene now when we talk about the field because they brought 7 noble women with them. And one of those noble women was bathing up in Powlentir, which is up maybe a kilometre or so from the source of the field. And she saw a man approaching in the distance. She was so afraid and ashamed, she tried to hide herself and managed to drown herself by accident. And the irony of the tale is that when the man that she had seen coming up the river in the distance landed and found her floating lifeless on the river, it turned out that he was her husband, Lee. So he took her out of the river and, I suppose, with great ceremony, is supposed to have buried her under the big burial mound that's there on the bank of the river just beside Powlentir, that we call the Bullaghan nowadays. And the river that claimed her life still bears her name. She was Field, and according to Keating, the river was called Inverfaila.
Then we're leaving Powlentir there now. We have a nice little traverse back up the hill. From here now, the next step, you were saying, there's a bridge below. What's the name of the bridge?
Barry's Bridge. Barry's Bridge would be the first bridge that goes under there. And so.
Can we walk down Barry's Bridge and have a look at it?
Yeah, we will do.
bridge. That's the first bridge on the road network. There's a few private houses up along that, right, but that's the first main bridge. The next one is this village.
And where did the name Barry's come from?
That was Barry's, lived there in the house. It was always known as Barry's Bridge.
Raymond O'Sullivan explains the Barry family's influence in Rockchapel and North Cork.
Now, those Barrys became quite famous afterwards. They went into politics, Charlie Barry in Wheeling, and his grandfather was known as the County Barry. Before that, I think it might have been back in the 1880s, possibly, I heard that there was one of them working in Limerick. He did a favour for some American that happened to be visiting the place at the time, and the American said to him, he said, you know, you're wasting your time here. He said, you should come to the New World. He decided, they were adventurous people, obviously, and he took off and finished up in Oregon. That's where your man was. And he was a cattle farmer. And apparently, there is some sort of a little bush that grows in Oregon that's very prickly. And your man noticed after the year that half of the grass wasn't eaten. He said, what you should do? He said, you should get sheep. And he bought 1,000 sheep. And they ate every bloody thing. And they went right in under the bushes. I said, they nearly ate the bushes and all. But that's what started the sheep farming in Oregon. And after a while, he set that Barry boy up and he brought out his two brothers and they brought out their cousins and the cousins brought out their neighbours. And I think for a finish up in that period of time, say between 1880 probably and 1960, in that 80 years, I'd say probably anything from 800 to 1,000 young fellas from Western Duhallow immigrated to Oregon as shepherds. The fail is running right out in front of their house just at the other side of the road. They're an important part of the fail, and really I often thought, you know, there should nearly be a plaque put up and plaque put up that gate, because that immigration to Oregon is a huge part of the modern history of Duhallow.
That's the second part of the first episode of Come West Along the Feel. We'll hear the final part after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Now let's return to the final part of episode one. This is Come West Along the Feel.
My journey along the Feel leads to Brúchna Corrigha in Rockchapel, a cultural centre beside the Lyrinaig River, a small tributary of the Feel. Inside, Johnny has gathered locals to share how the village rose from hidden mass rocks to the vibrant community it is today.
My name is Raymond O'Sullivan. I'm from Newmarket. In the penal times that the priests were hounded and they could be quite fatal to be practising your religion, and mass rocks popped up all around the place. But there was one definitely here near the present church, and the rocks, I heard that it was just down from the church and up to the right, up along the river again, up along the field. It would have been a place where they would have met only occasionally for mass. They were places where people would gather for social intercourse as well. You know, that there might be a bit of trading done there. Maybe you might sell a few calves there. Or if there was a bit of matchmaking going on. They were the centre of the place. But Sir Richard Griffith, back around the time of the famine, opened up roads in through Slieve-Lucre, and one of those roads, one of those coach roads, came back here to Rockchapel. I'd say probably going to Abbeyfail. It actually gave a new lease of life to that little centre. Like, you know, the chapel replaced the Mass Rock, and Lord Dungarvan, he built a school for them, and there was a coach house for changing horses and where people could have a drink and maybe lodgings just on the right hand side there opposite Paddy Molly's pub. Suddenly it became a village. It was one of the ones that actually succeeded, that actually transitioned from a Mass Rock into an actual thriving village. And you know, all of the other things that have happened to it since, Brúchna Corrigha here is another, and they have another community centre at the other end of the town. It's a thriving village now, but actually that was it, very humble beginnings. That was how Rockchapel started.
Rockchapel lies in the heart of Slieve-Lucre, a region long celebrated for its rich tradition of poetry, music and dance.
Michael Allen, and I'm from Rockchapel. We'd be part of Slieve-Lucre. The number of very, very talented musicians that's in the parish is unbelievable. I'd say you would find it hard to equal the number anywhere. We're very talented musicians and very talented dancers and singers.
I'm Seamus Cotton from Clonakilin Rockchapel. I'm playing the knotted cord in the fox hunter reel. Thank you.
edge of the river Dun Laoghaire.
Dennis O'Callaghan shares the story of Rockchapel's musical heritage, rooted in the Slieve Lucra tradition and the creation of Brúch na Cóirge, a centre built to celebrate and preserve it.
Yeah, it's a nice link to keep the tradition going. It's nice to have a place to come together as well, like, and play music and stuff like that. Like. Well, there was a call to Spanstetter here back in the 60s. There was a young Kelly band there at that time that did very well in competitions and that. Like. There were three of the Dillies and three of the Welshes and three of the Cortons, Seamus Corton and his two sisters, Anne Cronin and John Murphy, you know, so there's quite a few calls and that, and they did very well. And they used to hold flag halls here in the village. There was a few of them held. There was even a couple of county flag halls held here, like, and of course there was music being taught as well then, like, you know, down through the years. There was a great tradition of music here ever before the cultus was formed. There was two dance halls here, Stex and Curtains over here, known as Teagin Connies, to the local musicians, you know. But now that there had been a great tradition here, like.
Leaving Brúch na Cóirge, I followed the River Feel west towards Brusna, stopping at the ruins of an old building along the riverbank, formerly Rockchapel Creamery.
William Murphy, better known as Bill Murphy, and I'm originally from Glenochiel, and this is Kincardy, where I live now. I had my father saying, he remembered the creamery being built. Creameries was built by the riverside. Took a lot of water to clean up the place and wash the dairy down after the creamery been over. They fixed a pump that brought it up from the river and pumped it in as much as they wanted in. And the first one that we used the creamery was dairy disposal board. And the dairy disposal board salted to the Newmarket dairy to the place at one time, to the main employment place for farmers and for workers. And
in the years that followed, Rockchapel Creamery ceased operations. However, William remembers the story of one famous visitor.
When they turned over from the solid fuel, then they turned to the crude ale for burning in the creamery, and that's what kept it going. An ale company from Cork, they used to deliver it. But Chris Deering, he came here with a load of petrol, and Denny Shane used to work here at the creamery, and he said he brought his young fella out to shake hands to Chris Deering. He was a great good hurler, a great Cork hurler. When they closed the creamery then from taking in milk, and they used to collect it with a lorry, and that milk would be taken to Golden Vale by truck. Then Golden Vale and Vale joined Kerry, and some of the farmers here went to Kerry before that. It broke up the crowd, you know, and the crowd got smaller and smaller all the time until it closed.
As the Feel flows towards the Kerry border, I'm joined by Larry Begley, a local historian from Moncollins.
So, Larry, this is Rathley Stick. There's a man-made bridge, concrete block, about 20 metres in length, stretching across River Feel. Can you tell me, when exactly was this bridge built, and what would the reason behind it have been?
When they built the school in Clarig in the church, there was a shop there. When the River Feel was in flood, they couldn't trust the river, because all they had across it were flags for stepping on stepping stones. There was a big tree ground there, and Rahelly's farm. So they cut down the tree and they stretched it across the river. And that's how we got the name Rahelly's Stick. Now, I mentioned that the tree was a bit dangerous and rotting. So they got Cockcomb to come to build a walk there across the river, the bridge. And that's what it's still called Rahelly's Stick.
So, Larry, we're just leaving Rathley Stick now, and our next stop is Guinness Bridge. That's where the river flows into Kerry. Let's head there.
We're standing at Guinness Bridge. Kinnear's Bridge, they call it around here. This was built by Arthur Griffith, 1829 to though. It was part of the new road from Vistor to Newmarket. This bridge here crosses the Brannock. Just here at Corrigan Lynch, this Brannock joins the field. Brannock rises about 2 miles away from the Blackwater and the field, and it flows 4 or 5 miles down here. And it's 47 miles, I think, from the steps of the field to where it flows into the sea.
The Brannock rises at Garabawn in County Cork, not far from the sources of the Blackwater and Clyduck near Mount Eagle. After flowing just 4 miles, it joins the field at Knockatoon, the Hill of the Sleep near Guinness Bridge. It's the first main tributary the field meets on a 75-kilometre journey to the sea. To understand the role of tributaries like the Brannock, I spoke again with Catherine Hayes from Inland Fisheries Ireland.
Yeah, so I suppose the tributaries of the field, they play a vital role in shaping our river's health and our biodiversity. They feed the main river with clean, cool, oxygenated water, which we talked about earlier, for salmon spawning. And they also create a network of habitats where fish can spawn and young fish can live. And they support a rich variety of both aquatic insects, plants and other wildlife like the otters and the wagtails we talked about. And the tributaries also help to regulate our river flows, and they reduce the risk of flooding, and they bring in nutrients to sustain our river's food webs and our overall ecosystem health. So some of the main tributaries around here would be the Brannock, the Cahir, they'd be the main ones. You know, I suppose a lot of the smaller ones would have local names, and you know, maybe on the EPA river naming system they'd be there, but they'd be the main tributaries that we'd have there as well.
Guinness Bridge forms the boundary between Cork and Kerry. Its name taken from a family closely connected to the area.
This was the home of the Guinness. They were brought from France by Lord Alfred. He gave them all this land here in Knockatory. They became a big family. They were not. Even one of them became an MP in 1910, Paddy Guinness. Here as well from this area came Dennis Guinness, and this opened Guinness stores in Dublin. And he bought Cleary's for 20,000 quid in the famous Cleary's. The Guinness were not long ago for faction fighting. And they were known as the Brannock Slashers. And they often had fairs and markets. They'd fight with black tarn sticks.
To our left here then, it says Welcome to Kerry. What would that townland over there be called, Larry?
That's Nakawina over there, the home of the Mahin is. And up to the left here of Ray Crossland. So that road up to the left was built by Fairfield. He built it as a hunting lodge. Fairfield built most of the roads in Brosna, including that one there. That road to the right here, beyond the bridge, is called, it takes you up to the Knockatory, get the Sogan Road. And the Sogan Road was called after the Sogan Arrow, one of the Fitzgeralds. And that area is Knockatoon, the Hill of the Sleep. The other side of the bridge here, we have Corrigan Lynch. It's made famous in that famous song by Dan Hannan, My Native Busty Town.
Our journey pauses here at Guinness Bridge. From the upland source, True Rock Chapel, we explore the field's ecology, biodiversity, and the way it shaped the local landscape and community. In the next episode, we pick up the trail in Moncollins and Brosna, where we meet the local angling club and continue exploring this upper stretch of the river. Yeah, that's the first episode of Come West Along the Field. I hope you enjoyed that. And as Connie said, we'll have another episode next week, so stay tuned for that. Now we'll take a break, and after that, we'll be remembering the late, great Paddy Fogarty.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
This is the Saturday Supplement, and someone who listened to the Saturday Supplement regularly, because he used to call in to me in my brewery in Wardville, was the late, great Paddy Fogarty, one of Waterville's most famous sons, steeped in the community and especially in his beloved Waterville GA club as well. And you'd often see him with the Waterville GA jacket. And where I am, the church is right across the way from me, and the grave, and the graveyard where his wife, his late wife Rose, is buried, and he'd call there every day. And of course that's where his great friend Mick O'Dwyer is as well, so he'd be paying a visit to them. And I used to love to have the chats with him, and he was so proud of all his family, and he'd be telling you about how they were doing, and he'd be like almost an agent as well, because he'd be sorting out interviews for me as well, because he has a very talented family. But they didn't lick it off the stones, because Paddy and Rose were a very famous duo, and I mentioned several times in this programme that they played at my parents' wedding, my wife's parents' wedding. We had them for our after wedding in 2018, and it was in 2018 that I interviewed them, and I actually interviewed them on their anniversary as well before that. But they were having a very special night coming up. So this was in November leading into December, and their special night was in December 2018, where they were celebrating 60 years playing music. And what a fantastic night that was in the Sea Lodge, which of course was originally called The Lodge, which was run by Mick O'Dwyer and Mary Carmel, and where they often played in that place. Paddy has left an indelible mark, and not only on this side of the pond, but also in Birmingham, where he was a founding member of the Birmingham's St. Brendan's GA club. And he was very proud of that fact too. He had a massive funeral during the week, and also his face was seen on the big screen in Croke Park, along with Michael Lester's. I'd say Paddy would have loved that. There was a beautiful eulogies at the Mass, and it was a fantastic Mass, and his family played some unbelievable music as well, which no doubt Paddy and Rose would have been proud of. So here's a little snippet of an interview, and I think it really shows the relationship that Paddy and Rose had. Paddy, when did it all begin for you, the music?
Well, I suppose, really speaking, it began maybe, 60 years, I suppose. We're talking about the band in Birmingham, myself and Rose playing together. But I played, I suppose, possibly 5 years before that. Maybe I was playing around here, you know. I was in the Spunkhorn School, and I played in the Wave Crest Ballroom, but the teacher wasn't very impressed with it anyway. But sure, I did it at the time anyway. I said today they wouldn't take any notice of it, you know. And I played in Fogarty's Hall and the Harties and Benniskillies. I was only a young lad that time. Like my mother died when I was 15. My father died. I was only 10 when my mother died, and 15 when my father died. But anyway, when my mother died, I remember that time my father was a well-known musician around here, and he had a little melodeon, I remember, and he put it away and hide some. He thought it wasn't hide anywhere at that time when my mother died. It was a done thing that time. You didn't go to a dance for 12 months or nothing, so he didn't play. So he caught him, put it away. So anyway, I found it one day anyway, so I kept at it anyway. I knocked a tune out of that. That was my first tune. That's the way I stepped it.
Yeah. And what did your father make of it when you took up the melodeon?
Do you know, when he got to know it, he couldn't believe it. Like, you know, a lot of people thought he taught me. He didn't teach me to. I don't think he'd be up to that to I wouldn't be able to teach anybody either, you know, but he would advise me right and wrong, all right, you know.
Yeah, you played many years in England. When did you go to England then?
I went to England in 1957, I suppose I wasn't long over until I started playing music, you know, with a couple of fellas, and we started the St. Brendan's Club. We celebrated their 60th anniversary there. I was the only founder member of that club still alive. So myself and Rose, we were over to that there about 3 weeks ago. They had 400 people at it, you know, so that they started the club that time. I played music for them. They had a social every weekend, you know, Saturday and Sunday. We kind of started a band playing away there, and then I met Rose, and that's at a wedding it was.
Yeah.
And Rose happened to be a bridesmaid. I was playing in the wedding. That's the day we met, and I said she'd be ideal for our band, you know. She sounded.
So you're thinking business wise or romantic wise at that stage?
Every way I was thinking. I was thinking every way, yeah.
And did you do a duet on the stage, I mean?
We did, yeah. You know, sang that day, yeah, that's right, yeah. And then from there on, you know, she joined up with us playing music. We started going out together, and then we got married 4 years later.
Well, and that's what, Rose, I better bring you in here because Petty's doing all the talking at the moment. I don't think that's allowed too much.
No, I've not allowed.
Rose, where are you from and how did you get into music?
I'm from County Monaghan and I was playing with the showman. I went over to England when I was 14. But before that, I was playing with Pat Campbell's show band. And then I thought, you know, that there was money flying off the streets in England. So I decided that I'd like to go over to my sister's to work in England. So I went over at that early age to England and left the band. And the band went from strength to strength, you know, playing all over the place. And then I went over and for a few months I wasn't doing anything like about it, and then I met Paddy, and so he had a group, and so we started singing from that on 60 years ago.
And in the initial group, was there many of you in it? Was it just the two of you, or was there a few?
Oh no, there was two. There was a guitar player, and there was Paddy was a drummer, and there was a guitar player, and
I also played the accordion, and there was a bass guitar player.
Yeah. What were your favourite places to play over the long number of years you played?
My favourite places to play was in a lodge down in Waterville. We used to play there on Sunday nights, and they used to come from Kells and everywhere. It used to be packed with about 20 sets on the floor.
Is that when Mary Carmel and Mick O'Dwyer had it?
Mary Carmel and Mick O'Dwyer had it, yeah. It was wonderful. And a great night. Sunday night was the night, you know, down in Waterville at that time. Mm-hmm. And we enjoyed playing Nuala. Sullivan had the Lobster Bar. And we enjoyed playing for Nuala and the Lobster Bar too. And we played in the Butler Arms and we played in the Bayview. Mm-hmm. Or Abbey Huggart, God rest him at the time. We played, you know, 7 nights a week.
Go away.
Yeah, and we played at a wedding every Saturday.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Petty, what was your favourite place to play, do you think? And you played all over, we must say.
Yeah, there was a lot of places, really. There were two great places in Birmingham. We played there in the Harp and the Shamrock. They were kind of similar to the Gaelty model, London, you know. Mm-hmm. And we played then in places, you know, Irish clubs, Catholic clubs, Wolverhampton, Coventry, outside of Birmingham, you know. And then we had the occasion of playing in the Gaelty Moor as well. One time we launched a CD there.
You played at a lot of weddings, and I have to say, you played at my parents' wedding, and I often say this to you, and you played at my wife's parents' wedding, and we had yet our after wedding
right,
as well,
yeah.
Which was lovely. So it must have been, what has it been like to know you've been part of people's special occasions all down through those years? Because you must have played at an amount of couples' weddings.
Oh, an amount of couples. We nearly married everybody around here. And they're still together, everybody we're married.
Yeah.
But you know what it is, the weddings now, yes, we really enjoy meeting them now and saying, oh, you played at my wedding 36 years ago, you played at my wedding 40 years ago. And it's lovely. Mm. We were playing, this is only a couple of years ago over in the, it was the Club Med that time. And we were setting up the music to play at the Senior Citizens. We've played there for 44 years. We've played over there every year for the Senior Citizens. We're that ourselves now, double. But anyway, he came in and he stood at the door and he said, Paddy and Rose. My Christ, he said, you're still playing. And he said, you know something? You played at my wedding 36 years ago, he said, and I thought you were dead. Paddy, that's enough.
Do you know, Joe, there was one night we were playing in the lodge, I remember, and Susan McCann was playing there anyway, and Rose and myself and the two girls, we were playing before her anyway, and I remember I was standing by the door of the kitchen after, and there was a big crowd in there, you know, and this Tony Lockman, God rest him, he's dead now, he was from Castlebaine, he was a big band manager, going back the years, he was a great friend of mine, because I got to know him through the GA club, we used to book the bands for the festival, you know, mm-hmm. And he was a personal friend of Mick O'Dwyer's actually, mm-hmm. Lovely man, but anyway, he said to me that night, he said, he was listening to Rose singing, and he said, you know, he said, if your wife never left man, and left man, she'd have made it as big as Susan McCann or any of them, you know, or mm-hmm. Philomena Begley.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I said, Tony, that'd be all right, but I didn't know a singer then.
You knew where your priorities were. Yeah, that's the late, great Paddy Fogarty and the late, great Rose Fogarty as well. May they rest in peace, and our thoughts and sympathies are with their family
Debbie and Geraldine and son-in-laws and grandchildren and everyone that knew them, and the many, many friends and connections Paddy Fogarty would have had. May he rest in peace. He's there with Rose now. He used to go to the Hooligans in the sun up till recently, but I'd say there's some Hooligan in heaven right now. Now, we'll take a break for the news at 10, and I'll join you again in the next hour where we'll have Dominic Walsh for In Focus.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Oops, order yours to take away today.
We're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far, and I hope you enjoyed episode one of our documentary on the River Feel and the first hour, and we'll have another episode of that next week. And it is the first Saturday of the month, so that means it's time for a monthly In Focus photography slot with Dominic Walsh, and Dominic joins us. Dominic, I was just thinking there, after all these years we've been at it, this started around COVID, didn't it? 2020, I think we started In Focus. We should have an all sig tune for you, you know, an all Dominic Walsh In Focus. Something better than that, maybe.
Well, in all fairness, I would deserve a theme tune now to stage like that, you know. Because
what kind of music would you go for?
What kind of music? I like Bob Marley, like that Sunshine Reggae. I like that kind of cool music, that drone.
Dominic Walsh on the radio.
I could pull up my motorcycle outside. You could have the noise of the motorcycle and all, and me coming in, taking off the helmet and fixing the hair, even though I don't have a lot of hair.
It's radio, now, remember that.
Yes, and we could dye the colour of the hair back to its original colour.
Radio again.
That's it. And so, listeners, my hair was mousy colours, the same colours as Joe. Now, it's a little bit grey. Not very grey, but just it's a little
it's
bit grey.
It's white as snow, in fairness.
All the compliments are coming in fast now.
It's stunning. I'm just saying.
Yes, yeah. I'm waiting for the Easter egg now to come next now. So, that's it now, Joe.
The only thing, if there was a motorbike, it started, I think it was like a motor segment. So, we could have a camera
clicking sound. That'd be a good idea.
We'll get working on that, and if anyone has an idea for a tune we could use with it, maybe a good old Kerry polka or something kind of at the back of it.
We could. I'm sure like all your staff and I here like could organise a little jingle for me like that, you know.
We'll get working on that straight away, Dominic, for your sig tune, so the next time you're introduced. But Dominic, a pleasure as always, and as always we ask Dominic to take photos from the month, and then we look into his archive, and we're also going to be looking at your photos, and the theme we set for it was Ireland's Call, and kind of proud to be Irish as well, and of course Patrick's Day was on. You were out, no doubt, for Patrick's Day, were you?
I was out for St. Patrick's Day. I went to Dingle for the 6 a.m. parade, and it was absolutely lovely. And it's amazing. Like, they start at 6 a.m. They start when it's dark, and they go around the village playing. Then they go in for mass, and they have mass inside, and it's a lovely event. And you've a lot of people there, and you've even onlookers that would come. But see, the thing is, and I've alluded to this the last time, in Dingle, when the parade starts, there's only the Dingle Fife and Drum Band. Mm. But as they're going around, and all the people walk with it. So when it finishes, then you've a fine crowd at it like that, you know. But it's amazing the amount of tourists that were out at that hour of the morning as well. Back
really,
in the day. Yeah, it was absolutely lovely to see them. But it was a lovely, crispy morning.
Yeah.
The rain came later on that day. You can even see it, like the weather affects our photography and our time that we spend taking pictures as well, because like March really was a kind of a hard month for taking pictures, and you can't blame people for not going out taking pictures because the weather's just, you know, it's just not forgiving on that. It's either wet or it's rainy or it's windy or something like that, you know. But even to get out and make an attempt was great like that, you know. So
It started off, it was dry, but then it got very wet, or the noon parades kind of got hit, and then later on around the one in Waterville was like 4, it was dry for that then.
Tralee got washed out. It got a lot of rain around Tralee, that misty rain. That's the worst rain, like in the photography, like we tend to call that wet rain. And like in wet rain is that type of light rain that goes every place and you can't get rid of it at all. Whereas we call heavy rain, which would be dry rain really, that would just come.
I was about to say all rain is wet.
It is, yes, yeah. And that, it just, like, when I say that, like, because when you have the wind around, it flies that light rain, misty rain around. It gets into your lens, it gets all over the place, and it's just there. Whereas if it's heavy rain, you put up an umbrella and it's falling around you.
Yeah, very good. It's interesting you said there was tourists there, because it is the traditional start of the tourist season, and isn't it St. Patrick's Day? That's kind of when all the tourists start to come, and away we go then.
It is, do we appreciate what we have at times, Joe? Like with all the parades and all the events like that, you know, and when you see these things happen, it's lovely. And being part of Irish, like, it's celebrated all over the world.
Yeah.
There's buildings going green, there's rivers turning green like that, you know, and there's people, our ministers go and represent us around the world, which is like it's great to be out there, it's great to be seen, and it's good for Ireland as well.
And it's Kerry Shamrock that goes around
the
route,
right, yes,
from Ballinskellig there, which is brilliant. Right, so Dominic brings along photos from the month, and the Good Friday, of course, was yesterday, the crucifixion of Jesus. Tralee's annual Good Friday pageant was performed once again in the parish church of St. John the Baptist, Castle Street, at 3 o'clock yesterday, Good Friday. The pageant is part of the traditional Good Friday ceremony that commemorates the passion, crucifixion and death of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. This dramatic presentation of the Good Friday Gospel was staged at St. John the Baptist by St. John the Baptist Parish Liturgy Drama Group, A Story Nave on Bashta. And in this photo, and it's kind of a collage again, we see a scene. It's Jesus. Is it Mary, his mother, or is it Mary Magdalene? Mary's
no,
mother.
No, that's Mary's mother, yeah. That's Jesus.
And then we have a little boy praying with the rosary beads, and then we have a group of children as well. And we have Barry, Helen, Amber, Andrea, and Jeremiah. So this is a kind of a recreation. It really brings things to life. It kind of takes it beyond just the traditional stations of the cross. They're actually reenacting the passion.
They are reenacting the passion. And the reason I chose this picture, because if you can remember last month, I said I took a picture of a lady and I used window light to take the picture.
Yes, yeah.
It had to have been one of the most interesting conversations I've had with people as I've met and spoken to me about window light and the use of window light, and that you don't have to have these expensive flashes or know a lot about lighting techniques or anything like that. It's very simple photography that you just go along and you take. It's what you see is what you get on that. And it's just using your camera or using your mobile phone and that, and just kind of just caption the moment. And this is in St. John's Church. Happened this week. They had the dress rehearsal and Brian Cable sent me an invitation to go along and shoot it. And I went along to shoot it, and it's just a perfect example of the light coming in from a church window. Now, I went to this particular window that has mainly plain and frosted glass on it with a little bit of colour in it.
Yeah.
So I could manage the light a lot better. And all I was like is just, I put him into position, and that's actually what I saw. I took a meter reading through the camera.
Yeah.
It's if you just look through your phone, it'll take it. And I just captured a picture on the light on the people's faces. And you just see, it makes for very dramatic photography.
Yeah, it
and
does.
It's so simple.
Cinematic.
It's cinematic is the word, actually. And to be honest, when I'm working with people, especially if they're actors, that's why I always say to people, like, if you're going to an event like St. Patrick's Day Parade, people will love to get their picture taken and they'll pose for you. When I spoke to them and I told them what I'd like or the positions that we're going to, and I gave them my ideas, and these people came up with these young people especially, were absolutely fantastic work. There was one young man there, he was 9 years old. There was another girl, she was 11. Another girl was 12 or 13 as well, like that. And they gave me so much time. And if you see how I done, just to tell you how I composed the shot.
Yeah.
I put them in the pews, and I went back up and I put on a very long lens to go and shoot it, because I think the further you're away from somebody, the less intrusive you are to them. In other words, you're not stuck in their face and you're not going into their space. So I took it from quite a distance on that. And what I did was, before I actually took the picture, I went along and I picked a stone on the wall. And I said, that is your eye line, because I like to correct my eye line beforehand.
Right.
So I picked out a stone on the wall, put my finger there, and I asked the young people especially to look up at this stone and just keep looking at it on that and put them into position.
And what were you, if they started looking everywhere else, what would that matter?
Possibly the shutter speed I was using might have been a little bit slow.
Yeah.
So if they moved up fast, I'd get a blur on them.
Okay.
These were shot around maybe 60, maybe 80 of a second.
Yeah.
On that is what I was shooting on.
And it's kind of looking to heaven or looking to God.
Looking
is that what you're kind of going?
Yeah. And the thing is, if they're looking in different places, you know, it's like as if there's almost an apparition there in the picture. And I picked out a spot.
That ruins that illusion.
And what I've got is, I have the two ladies at the back. They're actually, or the lady and young man, they're looking at a different location. And then I got my main character, the lady in front, who's a pew in front of them, and she's taken as well. I got them into a position where they're clasping their hands as if they're praying, and I just, and you know, there was candles at the back. People were lighting candles, you know, and you were like, I went in, got 6:10 mass, I stayed for mass, mass finished, and people were lighting candles afterwards, and I was waiting for them to go. I said, this is my spot now that I picked out, and it just worked out well. And the thing about it is, like, you see Jesus and Mary there, like, you know, like, they were just really professional. When I asked them to hold a position and look up, I wanted them looking at the eye line on the wall, and I've married in looking at Jesus, and it just creates, you know, like you at home there, get time, go onto the Radio Kerry Facebook page and there and have a look, and you can see these pictures that I captured from the event in St. John's Church.
I tell you, whoever's on costume deserves a raise, because they're great costumes, aren't they?
They're fantastic costumes.
Yeah, the Crown of Thorns.
Yeah, and, the, and like, there's so many people involved in this.
Yeah.
It's a big production, and it took place yesterday, and to see it, and everybody's so intent, and all the young people, and it's fantastic. And George, it's a great social event as well. People should go and watch these events, and people should go and get involved in them, because it's great socially, great for mental health, and just meeting people.
Yeah, well said, Dominic. Now, your other photos then, they're completely different. And I'm just bringing them up here on my screen, and I was trying to pronounce this, but it's spelled WAZP. So WASP, I'd imagine, the Z is like an S, and it's these two people, a man and a woman, and they have a little dog, a pug, I think you call that dog. If anyone remembers the film As Good As It Gets, there's with Jack Nicholson, and Greg Kinnear, an Oscar-winning performance in that. There's that little dog, and that's the dog that is in the front here. The workplace pet Lulu arrived in for the picture, and it's WASP founders Mariana Cobal and Shane Hassett, pictured on the plant floor of WASP, based in the O'Connor Centre, Mona Valley, in Tralee. And WASP is an end-to-end supply chain solution for products and parts produced using the capabilities of 3D printing, with a growing global network of production facilities and partnerships with the leading technology, materials and service providers in Europe, Asia Pacific and North America. 3D printing.
3D printing, it was amazing. Like, I was in awe when I went up. I went up to do a picture, it was for Sunday Business Post, and brought my studio lights, because I knew I wanted the light just a little bit different. And if you're looking at this picture, there's a gentleman on the left, a lady on the right, and the dog, jumped up, and dog went up on the table in the centre. And I spent a lot of time lighting it beforehand. It was inside in a confined space, and it was a big office on that. And you're trying to, when you go in, Joe, you're trying to get an angle to see how it goes. So if I'm ever doing a job, I will always arrive 20 minutes, even up to half an hour beforehand. I'm relaxed, I can get all my bits and pieces in, and I'm ready to do the shoot, and I've it all worked out. So the people that I'm actually shooting just sit down for the picture and I shoot it. And it's something people should remember, that, you know, if you're taking pictures of the family or anything like that, or any occasions, anytime, you know, like, think of what you want to do first. Get them set up, and I got the picture. So there's four lights in this. It's quite overlit, because sometimes papers want it lit very well and all the details shown on it. But the interesting shot is when I took the picture, actually, they put shoes up on the counter, and I moved the shoes around, and I said to them,
you should never put shoes on the table.
So my wife says, no, my wife would have
told him.
Yes, yeah, on that. So we'll say the counter. We'll say the counter. The display area.
No, I don't agree with it.
We'll say the display area. They put put shoes up, and I was kind of said, are the shoes... They're actually come from a 3D printer, these shoes.
Go away!
They make these. They're 3D printer shoes. It's amazing what you can do with it. Like, that's, like, if you look at the budget, they've made little signs, they've made little houses in the back, you know?
Yeah, I see.
And
yeah,
all these things. And they've made
so are they
faces.
All 3D printed? What's
everything
the
you see there is 3D printed.
Oh, wow.
It is absolutely unbelievable what they could do with it like that. And they were showing me other bits and pieces they did. And they've obviously stuff that they show them that can't be shown, basically.
Yeah,
it's a prototype is what they were showing me as well. And it's amazing what they do. But again, the dog makes it.
And the dog's real.
And the dog's
not 3D printed. No.
The dog's not 3D printed. The dog's amazing. And the dog just stayed up there, looked into the camera, and was just there for it. But the dog wasn't happy unless the dog was in the picture. It was in the picture. Because the dog was kind of running around, and every time it was up. But once the dog went up the table, There wasn't a word out of the dog. And again, it's back to composition to see how to do it. Like, I shoot for shapes because I might get a shape from a newspaper. They say, oh, we want a specific shape for the page that they lay out on that. Because papers nowadays, what they tend to do is, it's like, you know, like it's drop and fill. In other words, they put the captions and, let's say, the story in, and then they just drop in a picture on that, so it's drop and fill is what they use.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. And everyone cooperated. They say you should never work with children or animals, but Dominic always works with all of them.
Yes, yeah.
Dominic takes all comers. Brilliant. So there are Dominic's photos that he took this month. And after the break, we're going to be looking at your photos. And I also have a question for Dominic myself that I'd like him to see. Can he address it? But stay with us. We'll have more with Dominic after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops, Fish and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
Dominic Walsh is still with us for our monthly In Focus photography slot. And I mentioned before the break, I had a question to ask Dominic. Dominic, during the week, Thursday, our baby boy turned one, Cullen, is 1 year of age. So we're having the party now. This afternoon, Easter Saturday. So I said I'd ask, you know, I take a lot of the photos in our house, like, so I wanted to kind of get advice about taking photos, especially when you're dealing with younger kids as well. There'll be a lot of toddlers, twos, threes, fours, and how you take that photo. What would be your advice?
Well, you're probably going to take a series of photos.
Yeah.
On that, my number one picture that you need to take is, take a picture of Cullen standing in front of the cake.
He can't stand it.
Well, sorry, position him in front
of
the cake.
But he can pull himself up.
Sorry.
You've been very advanced. Although, you know, he'll be walking any day now, he'll be fine.
Well, my wife's niece brought her child up to our house during the week, and the child was, I think, less than a month old.
Yeah, don't tell me now he's walking.
No, it wasn't walking. It wasn't playing a tune. It wasn't taking pictures.
Yeah,
but that child, and tenure could, like, when it was up on your shoulders, it was well able to lean forward and bring up its head like that. Right, that'd be my first mistake. So I get back at that. Yeah. Let's
be waiting a long time for him to stand up. Well, he can pull himself up. All right,
let's get back to my listeners. Now, you don't realise the tough life I have in here, listeners. You know, I'm inside in Radio Kerry.
And you took Cullen's photo before, sure. You
I did
beautiful portraits,
yes, indeed,
of family,
yes,
portraits. Yeah, he was cooperative then. He was fine.
Very cooperative. Yes, not like his dad though.
No, no.
On that,
not a chip off the old block. So getting back to
there's the iconic picture that I would, and I've taken for my young fella the whole way along his life, is put him in front of their cake, number one it, and take the picture, and it's a loose picture of themselves only.
Yeah.
Do that every year of their lives.
Yeah.
Coming up along. It's a lovely picture. When they're 21 or even when they're old like that, you can put all these pictures together and they're all kind of the same position and the same, you know, iconic moment. It's lovely to capture.
Sitting behind the cake, is it?
Sitting behind the cake. Put him behind the cake on that and turn the number one so it's facing the camera.
Ah.
So the number two, the number three, the number four, the number five, like that. So it's not confusing when you go along.
So, and even the happy birthday, if it's right on it, that's facing the camera. So it's facing
what you want to capture.
That's a great tip.
So, with anything like that. If you're doing a group shot or anything like that, you know, anything like that, if they're holding posters or checks or anything like that, you don't actually face the people. It's not the people that are reading them.
Yeah.
It's the people that are looking at the photograph need to read what it is on that. And I'd get that out of the way straight away, so that's done and dusted.
Yeah.
Then what you can do, Joe's, go in when all the young kids arrive, take your pictures as early as possible.
Yeah.
When young kids arrive, even adults like that, get it done, get it dusted, and get it out of the way as soon as you can. Kids get tired, adults get tired, clothes might get a little bit destroyed or anything like that, you know. So do your formal pictures as soon as you can. The formal picture I would have is put them all around the floor. They're all going to be young or whatever like that.
Yeah.
Put the cake someplace where a child can't get at it.
Right.
In other words, it's the last thing to go into the picture and use somebody watching it on that. Because if you put a cake down and there's kids, young people there, the first thing they're going to do is they want some of that icing. So they're going to...
That'd be great for it too.
It would be to lunge forward. So get all your formal photographs and your set of photos done straight away and you can forget about them then.
And the big
after
thing,
that then,
yeah, sorry, before you move on there now, that group photo I think is where the challenge comes in, because are we trying to get them all to look at the camera, or are we just trying to get in the mayhem. And then, and another thing, a thing that I see happens is parents line up behind you or along with you and
click,
go, look here, look here,
look here.
And then you've eyes looking everywhere. Because even an inch off to the side is not looking at the lens.
Normally, when I take pictures and things like that, I tend to have nobody behind me.
Yeah.
And I tend to take control of it. Now, you asked the question, should there be pause? I say, no.
Yeah.
Like, don't ask him to smile. It's just like when I have people in the studio and say, oh, Joe, smile for the picture. You're taking their concentration and you're taking the essence of the purity of the picture away from it as well.
Yeah.
Like, if a child isn't smiling in the picture, that's the child.
Yeah.
You want to get the expression that you want to get them as they are on that. Sit down, go as low as you can.
Yes.
Or as high as you can. The reason saying low as you can, kids love when you're down to their eye level. They don't like you when you're looking down on top of them. So get down low if you're taking a picture. If you're taking a picture up high, what I do is I'd grab a teddy or I'd grab something that makes noise and I wouldn't pull it out till the very last second you're going to take your picture. Up and say, hey, and wave this. It makes a noise, squeaks or whatever like that. And they look up to see what's there.
Yeah.
That's your time to shine, to take your picture on that, you know, on that. As with groups, with young people like that, you're going to have some people put the child in their laps and things like that, you know. Make use of the people that you have there.
Yeah.
Some people can take two kids even like that, you know, and just get it and you'll fly. Joe, you'll fly through. You'll have no problems. Take your time. Don't rush it. Put your camera away when you've got your shots taken. And then when you see something else, lift it up and take your picture again like that.
And take a few action shots.
Take a few action shots. Take a few of the messy shots. Take some shots to kids crying or whatever like
Rice crispy bun being rubbed into the couch.
Rice crispy bun being rubbed into the couch. You know, and Joe, with when Cullen rubs his hands across your face after having his hand in the cake, they're the type of shots that you want. And they're the shots that you remember. Because we're living in a society now where people have the perfect picture every time.
Mm.
And they're like, you take a picture on your phone, oh, I don't like it because they're looking away, or I don't like it because they have the hand in the air. I don't like it because they're laughing too much and you can see into their mouth. You can see the fillings in their mouth like that.
Yeah.
They're lovely pictures to have in years to come or in time to have. Take the candid and do it like a kind of documentary style.
Yeah.
And it's lovely.
Yeah.
Save your pictures, put them someplace safe and keep your originals. And work aside, then you can work on anything you want to say for printing or anything like that.
Yeah,
I presume you'll bring in a picture next month so we can critique it, think. Do you know?
We'll have to see. I was just thinking there, the documentary element or whatever. My mother has a photo frame she got for Christmas and it's digital so everyone can send their photos to it.
Fantastic.
It's brilliant,
idea.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And the quality is brilliant on it. And like you can actually bring it away with you too, like an iPad. But I think that's a good one, but also the point you make about sending the photos or saving the photos, because people send them on WhatsApp and they think they're saved, and we keep saying it on this program, the quality is just blow it up or print it or whatever, it's just not there.
Now you can print it. Now I'm not saying you can't print from WhatsApp. You can print from WhatsApp, but you would be printing a smaller size photograph to keep
it's
the quality
compressed,
up.
Isn't it?
It is compressed. Like it's like you're turning a big picture, a 10x8, into a postage stamp. Is what you're doing, and that's what you're sending out. But I still advise Joe, get yourself a little bit of a picture album, and print some pictures for yourself as well.
Yeah,
because the phones aren't always handy and everything like that. And if you have a little album, you keep it under the table inside in the house, and people come in, they will look at it, and it's a lovely reference to go back to as well.
Yeah, a good tip as well. See, if you want to get a whole group photo and like you don't want, there's always something, oh, I'll take it, and you know they're out of it then, but they don't seem to mind, but still you want everyone in it. I had this thing I got, I think it was like in deals or something, it was like €5, it was a clicker kind of a thing, it had an app for the phone, so if you pressed it was Bluetooth, so if you pressed the clicker you take a photo. So you could have it in your pocket and you'd have the phone.
Yeah, self-timers.
That's what I moved on to now, is this self-timer.
It's fantastic,
A lot of people don't realise there's a timer on the phone.
Yeah.
You can set it to 10 seconds, 5 seconds, 3 seconds. So you set up your phone and then come back. But you have to set it for 10 seconds because I found the 3 seconds you'll be on the way back and you get the phone.
And if you have balloons or anything like that or any little things that you want to introduce, they always go at the back.
Okay.
Anything, balloons sticking up, go at the back. There's reasons. Obviously, you're going to block out somebody with the balloons. And obviously, it takes the attention away. And not every young person will like a balloon for fear that it would bang. So keep all these distractions away around like that, you know. And, you know, when you're going to take your pictures in, and just, as I say, interact with them, talk with them. don't run in straight away with your camera and take your pictures around. That, you know, people need to trust you.
Yeah.
And you'll get your trust very soon. If I go and do schools photography, if I'm doing back to school, for example, like that, I'll go in and I walk into the class, I bring in my stuff, everybody looks at me when I'm going in, and what I do is I just sit down on the ground. And I'm shooting across the tables at eye level. And after a couple of minutes, the young people, they're so caught up in their games or their reading or whatever, they take no notice of me.
Yeah.
And I take pictures. Now, with the cameras I have now, you can put them onto silent.
Yeah.
You don't even hear a click or you don't even hear a sound.
Yeah.
And you can take your pictures, and it's a lovely way to go.
Yeah. The ones I like are like those, like Moss Joe Brown, that we'll be talking about very shortly, you know, the daily life ones, because.
Candid.
Yeah. Yes, I have a photo there of my nephew and niece, and they're blowing bubbles, and, you know, they're showing each other how to, to dip it or whatever and to blow it. It's just a lovely photo of them, just kind of in action.
And they're the shots that will actually hit you the most, as opposed to both looking into the camera and putting on these cheesy smiles or anything like that, you know?
Yeah. Okay, let's look at people's photos that they sent in to us. jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Our theme was Ireland's Call, because we were in the midst of the Six Nations Rugby, and Ireland did very well in that, to many people's surprise, and it was also around St. Patrick's Day. So we'll start off with Moss Joe Brown. Butch Moore once sang a song, Walking the Streets in the Rain. Do you know that song? On the streets in the rain.
Yeah, he's amazing when he comes up with these captions, isn't he?
Yeah, but do you know that song?
No.
I don't. Yeah, I thought you were about to sing it for me. But and walk in the streets in the rain. It's not ringing a bell. But Bernadette O'Sullivan was standing on the streets of Lixna in the rain, and what joy filled her face when she captured a magic moment during the annual St. Patrick's Parade, when his feast day is celebrated for a man who was credited with bringing Christianity to Ireland in the 5th century. Yours, Moss Joe Brown. And it's a great capture of a capture, because someone is taking a photo, Bernadette is taking the photo, and thumbs up to the St. Patrick's Day parade there, like many parades that were across villages and towns in Ireland.
It's a lovely picture, and do you know what it is? It's a candid picture. I call it daily life, is what I come across like this, do you know? And that. And I've always said to people, you don't need to look into the camera to make a great picture. You know, take your time with it. And, like, he's just going along. The lady's standing at the side, and the parade is passing along like that. There's tractors, there's balloons, there's trucks, and there's everything. There's probably people playing and dancers. And like all the parades tend to have the similar things like that. So, and they're great. It's a great local event, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you can see the weather. You can see she's very, very well wrapped up. You know, so, like, you have to be. Yeah. Expect the unexpected when you go to these things. Great picture. Composition is very good.
Very good. Now, we are going to be looking at more of your photos, but we go to a break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
Dominic Walsh is still with us for our monthly In Focus photography slot, and we're looking at your photos, where the theme was Ireland's Call. And we got lots of nice photos in this month. And let's look at the next one. Students and staff from Cláisnín Uiscileaga, my old school. Here's the call for support for 13-year-old West Cork girl Féile O'Sullivan, who lost her two legs in a farm accident last July. On a beautiful sunny day with clear skies on Thursday, March 19th, all students lined up to spell out Féile's name. And drone operator Mick Kennedy from the Coast Guard, along with his colleagues, took drone footage of the fundraiser. Hashtag stand for Féile. And there we see all the students, and you can see it actually needs quite a lot of students. They're all packed together to spell out Féile's name, and then they've kind of framed it off in a square, and it's out in the basketball court there, with the stunning Connachtna Dubber in the background when you see the ground shot. And then you see the aerial shot then of Féile. What a lovely idea, Dominic.
It's a brilliant idea. Can you imagine just coming out of school, like, and having that view out of your school every day
I can imagine it, because I had it.
Yes, yeah, it's absolutely amazing like that. It's a great use of technology, really, isn't it, is what I call this. When you can get a drone to go up and you can spell out a name on the ground on that, and it's absolutely brilliant. And funny enough, the young lady's name is spelt out and you can see it, and it's the shadows that make it, if you look at the picture.
Yeah.
If you at home again, go and have a look at these pictures there online, on that from Radio Kerry, you can see it. And this time of the year, that sun is still quite low, and it creates very long shadows. If that picture was taken during the summer, high summer, you would probably have almost no shadows because the sun would be so high up in the sky. So like, there's different times of the year for taking photographs as well, and I think the shadows actually make it. It's fantastic. If I do golf courses, scenic shots like that, I tend to do it, if it's summer, early morning, late evening, so you the sun either rising or setting. But it's a great shot, and you know, it just shows that it takes, like, it seeing the pictures, it doesn't take account the amount of time. I reckon it could have taken an hour.
Yeah,
you know, to
do you think so?
I would think, yeah. To get all these people out and get them into position and to spell it out, to take it, to recheck it, and to go back through it again like that, you know. Like, fair play to the students for doing it. Well, and, like, the fact that they have yellow bibs on them then,
yes,
as well.
It
just,
say.
It highlights up in the sky like that, you know. And it just shows, like, if they didn't have yellow bibs on them, it just would mix in with the shadows, and the shadows are black, and a lot of students would tend to wear dark clothing as well, and that with jackets. So it's the yellow bibs like that. Again, if you're walking on the road and you wear yellow bibs, you can be spotted very quickly and easy like that. So it's the same thing.
What I like about it as well, so you can actually see the chalk mark as well on the ground, so it shows how they actually did it.
Yes.
If they stay inside the line. But from the ground, you're seeing kind of how the sausage is made, you know.
Yes,
you're seeing how it's done.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just looks like a crowd gathered. It's when you go to the air, then you see the beauty of it. And they even have the fada over the e, like, you know.
Yes, yeah.
well thought out. Great idea. And what a great thing the students did, so they should be commended. Well done for it.
If I was doing that, I would probably end up with exactly the same shot. Like, it's very well organised.
Yeah.
It's very well photographed, and it's very well timed as well to take that with the shadows there and that.
Mm. Just, you were mentioning the shadows. Can we go back to that a bit? So there is a difference when you're taking photos between the winter and the summer, isn't there?
There is quite a difference, yeah. Because, like, obviously during the summer, the sun could be quite high most of the time on that. And during the summer, it's quite low. On that, it can work to your advantage or your disadvantage. When I'm doing aerial photography now, for example, and if it's a very sunny day, and if it's during the winter and it's a sunny day, I tend not to do it.
Okay.
Because the shadows can be very extremely dark and dusky inside there, and you're trying to go into your settings to bring up the shadows. So it's an advantage or a disadvantage at times. But to this type of photography that they're doing, is the shadows add to it, actually. It really highlights and it pushes out to you.
Yeah, brilliant. Hi Joe, Ireland's call. Slightly different take here. This is a native Irish honeybee. The call is to stop import of non-native bees. Our natives have adapted to our cooler, moist climate over the centuries and risk being bred out of extinction if we allow other breeds to dilute ours. Thanks, Joe and Dominic. P.S. You promised me a day beekeeping with me. Still waiting. Dennis O'Sullivan. I presume that's to me, not to you, because I interviewed the beekeepers and the Beaufort beekeepers as well. But Dennis, don't worry, we will. I just have to find the time, and hopefully I won't get stung as well. You better have a good suit for me as well. But this is like a macro photo, you'd say, Dominic, isn't it?
It is
of the honeybee.
It is macro photo, actually. I just, would you believe, recently I photographed a gentleman and his hive and his honey there just recently, like that, you know, and that, and his name escapes me now, but I'll think for quite soon. And we were taking shots, and there was a bush full of flowers, and I arrived, and I heard this noise. It was a swarm of bees. Now, when I say swarm, there wasn't thousands; could have been a couple of hundred bees. But actually, I could hear them coming, and they landed on the plant, on that, and they were just all over the plant. And within about 10 minutes, they were all gone. And I said to the gentleman I was for him, I said, the bees are gone, they're not coming back anymore. He said, they've taken all the pollen. They came in, they did what they had to
did
do.
Did their work
and gone. He said, they'll come back tomorrow now when more flowers open up on that.
Yeah, but they're vital for the ecosystem, and they're so intelligent as well. But it's an impressive photo.
It is, yes. And now, fair play to Dennis, I think he took a gamble in the crop. And when I call a crop, it's when you cut a photograph and you shape a photograph like that. And not many people would do it like that. But what he's done is he's narrowed in and he's created an upright image, a very narrow, tall image like that.
Yeah.
And it really creates a lovely effect of looking at the picture. And again, if you get and you take your pictures, it's always nice, get your picture, but crop it or change the view. Take out too much sky if there's too much sky. Take out too much, let's say, grass if there's too much, and kind of highlight the actual what you need, which is the bee. And it's taking the pollen out of the flowers here on that. The composition is lovely, and the fact that it's our native bee on that. I have not got any great pictures of bees. This is an amazing picture. It's great.
Brilliant. Well done, Dennis. Hi, Dennis. Hi, Joe and Dominic. Here are my three photos for this month's competition. On Trur Drifford, the three sisters west of Dingle. Photo taken from Ballydavid Head and shows the Black Rock in the foreground and parts of the Sleeping Giant. And on Tiracht of the Blasket Islands in the distance. Tour Balla Gow, Ballydavid Tower and the remains of the signal tower at Ballydavid and Head, built in the early 1800s in far of in front, I think, of a possible in French invasion. It was a three-story building with the remains of the garrison and tower still to be seen. Westport House is the third photo, County Mayo, on one of our rare fine days last week. It was built in the 18th century and is currently open to the public and well worth the visit if you're in the area. Kind regards, Noel O'Neill. And Dominic, Noel is very talented, isn't he? Just these photos, each one after each other, more impressive than the next.
Oh, there's the three sisters I've tried to photograph a good few times and I've kind of given up. Not that I've given up, but it takes time to go up, because to get yourself into this position, it's a lot of walking, it's a lot of hiking, and like it just takes a lot of time to do it.
And have you tried from where Noel took it?
I haven't tried where Noel has taken. I've tried from different angles. All right, I've even tried from the sea on top of that as well, but I think this is unique actually, and this is the angle that you should be photographing like that, because like he's obviously done his research on it. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely lovely on that, and like the ruins, the buildings, and like it's lovely to see it. You've got a lovely blue sky on that, you know. The one thing there is, like, this time of the year you can tell that the sun is quite harsh when it does come out. Mm. Like, it's not like a Mediterranean sun would be, a softer sun down in the Mediterranean, where our suns, again, we're back with shadows. We're talking about shadows like that, you know. And what I tend to do is I tend to underexpose when I take my pictures. In other words, even with your phone, I make them a little bit darker. Okay. On that, and when I take it in and I go back and I readjust afterwards, you can bring up the shadows, and that'll bring up the shadows behind the rocks and the stones and the buildings, and you get a bit more shape and a bit more like to see in the pictures like that, you know. But they're great pictures, and the composition is lovely. I absolutely like that picture of the house up the country there, because it's taken away. You've got a river there, and that you've got a footpath up to the front of the house. You've got the trees in there. You've got the branches of the trees going out over the water. On that, so it kind of takes in a little bit of the sky, that you're not like, skies by themselves can be quite boring.
Yeah.
And if you put something in, whether it be a tree or a branch or something like that, or like take it from a different angle, it adds to it. They're a lovely selection of pictures.
Yeah, Westport House in Mayo. Would you like to live in a manor house like that?
No.
Yeah, either would I.
Can imagine trying to clean it.
I'm trying to heat it.
Yes, yeah.
It reminds me of Downton Abbey, kind of,
it
you
does,
know.
Yes, yeah.
When I was younger, I wanted a castle with a drawbridge.
Yeah.
I think that'd be impractical.
But isn't every man's home is his castle, what they say, isn't
very,
it? Isn't
very, very well said.
So you
Dominic.
Have the castle?
Yeah, I always knew your report. Good morning, Joe and Dominic. Another month down and time for more pictures. Every picture tells a story. I have two pics and a scale to go with each one. Well done. Number one man and his lamb. John Bottle feeding an orphan black lamb in the field. The black sheep of the family. Number two, a hen with an egg, which she delivered to our hall door. Happy Easter to you both and your families, Agnes O'Sullivan, and to you too, Agnes. It's always a pleasure to get your photos. The one with John feeding the baby, even though I keep saying it's the wrong beer bottle, we have to sort out that beer bottle. It's a fantastic photo, and that's a fairly humorous one, the hen bringing the egg to the door on Easter.
It is, yes. And that, no, it is really, I mean, like, if we had to get a picture of that kind of, you know, brought in the weekend, like the hen with the egg at the door, it's lovely. It's a great picture. Like, it's, look, see, that's it. I think people should always have a little camera or something with them like that, you know. Get the shot straight away. Always get the shot done. You get it, because you might have, you walked up at a hen, the hen could have walked away, or, you know, anything would have happened there. Somebody could have opened up the door. So get your shots nice and early and things like that, you know. As for the gentleman feeling that, yeah, we'll have to do something with the bottle. Like, even the award-winning McGill's, like, you know, would be the one to have in there, I'd say. All-Ireland, isn't it? If I can remember, isn't
that's
it?
Yeah, right, yeah.
And that, yes. It's lovely to see that. And they're quite moments that would just, you know, that'll imprint in your brain forever. You see a picture like that. The gentleman sitting in the grass, you've got trees in the background, you know, it's a nice sunny day, blue skies, and he's just doing something that he just does so naturally, and to capture that moment is great. It's in years to come that these pictures become more precious than ever.
Yeah, there's great tenderness in that photo as well. Dominic, your humorous photo, so we'll go for first.
Look, it has to be the hen and the egg, really, doesn't it?
I think it's lovely.
I laughed when you looked at that just when we were going to see. What we do is we go through the pictures the day before and we talk about when we see them. I don't know who's actually taking them, so, and I pick out my pictures, and then we know who's taking them after a great section of pictures. Lovely. I really like it as a humour picture.
Excellent, Agnes O'Sullivan. You are a humour photo of the month, and our photo of the month, Dominic.
The photo of the month captured me out of all the photos we got this month like that. It's a unique picture, and it's something that takes a lot of time and patience and to work with. And, like, you know, it's Ireland's call, really, and it's Ireland's call to save the bees, really, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. Excellent,
you know, like,
yeah,
we've got to save our bees. They're very important to us. Let those flowers grow in your gardens. Like, let those dandelion weeds, as we call them, grow. I leave them grow in my garden. And that, like, so it's very important. So that was taken by Dennis O'Sullivan.
Dennis O'Sullivan.
A great picture, and really, like, it's a good photographic picture.
Excellent, Dennis O'Sullivan, you are our photo of the month, and we will have to pay you a visit. And Dominic, you're going to stay with us, but before we go to our break, our theme for next month?
Our theme for month, look, the time is, we've got our hour back.
Yes.
That we want it.
There's a grand stretch of the evening.
Stretch of the evening like that, you know. And I'm going to say, let there be light.
Let there be light.
Has to be. Like, what? Like, this is a great one, like, that, yeah, you know, I think that you can work on. Like, again, I talk about using window light. I talk about the sun, the shadows. Like, there's so much involved in it, but you don't think about that when you're taking a picture. It tends to come to you automatically and intuitively, like that you can go along and get your pictures taken. So, anything at all to do with light.
And just, it can be a celebration as well.
Celebration,
let there be light.
Let there be light.
Excellent. And we're coming out of Lid as well, so, and into Easter. So, yeah, almost into the summer. Let there be light. I like that, Dominic. Very good. That is our theme of the month. Send them to jmcgill@radiocarry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month, and give us the old story, the scale, as Agnes put it. Give us the scale with your green graph, your photo as well. We're going to take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from
And now it's that time where we go into Dominic's archive, and Dominic has brought a brilliant collage of photos again. It's a well-known Labour politician back in the day, and former Thánaiste, Dick Spring, and he's there on the golf course with his golf clubs, and he's there with a very, very famous man, one of the most famous to ever have lived,
yes,
I would say.
Think so, yes, yeah.
Neil Armstrong, in the week that a lot of people are talking about the moon and space, Dominic brought this along with him. But do you know what? They're very natural photos, aren't they? It's like they struck up a bit of a friendship, I'd say, on the course.
I think they did. But look, Dick Spring's a gentleman anyway to talk to. Anytime I've ever met him or photographed him over the years, I found him to be more than helpful to me, even when he was in the high powered position of Thánaiste like that, you know, and he was Minister for Foreign Affairs as well, I think, for a time as well, and that, an absolute gentleman like that. This was taken out in Ballybunham. It was 1996. He came to Tralee, and it was John Griffin of the Kerry County Council invited him over, and they brought him down to Tralee, to Denny Street, and into the museum there, and they have Neil Armstrong Road down there, and the green is called after him as well, you know. And he was just an absolute gentleman. He was a lovely man to meet, and he loved meeting the young people, because he just had this way with them. Like, he'd kneel down and talk to them, the school kids and all that were there. And I think that as we're talking about this morning, you at home, that were probably there on the day that Neil Armstrong came to Tralee. I mean, it'll tweak some memories like that, you know.
And it was I think you said 96, it was April 97, is it?
It was April 1997. It was 1969. Was the time the walk on the moon? That's why I'm getting confused. Yes, on that, you know, on that, and when he
people
came,
people do remember it though. Yeah, it's mad.
They do, like, I mean, and even like this week with all the talk about rockets and going back to the moon and things like that, you know, it just tweaks that I had to go and get some pictures. But funny enough, when I look for the pictures, and it just shows that my archival system isn't 100% either. I took loads of pictures, but these were the only pictures that came up of him. Now, I know they're on my system, because what I tend to do is every 5 years, I renew all my hard drives. I take out the hard drives and I replace them again, and I transfer all my images from one hard drive to another. And I'm sure there's a glitch on the copying from one hard drive to another like that. But, you know, They were outside, they played golf, people walked around, walked with them, they were taking pictures, and it was a lovely event.
Yeah, Dominic, brilliant photos to bring in as always. Our theme for next month, remind people again?
Our theme for next month is a nice simple one, Let There Be Light.
Let There Be Light. You can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Dominic, pleasure as always, look forward to seeing you again next month.
Not a bother, and thank you to the listeners for sending in the pictures, and if you have any questions, please send them on.
That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Pat Kelly is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. I'll be back again next Saturday from 9 a.m. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry, because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.